Hello, happy Monday. It is a great Monday because we are back again for episode number 5 of Just Another Magnet Monday podcast with Chief Nursing Officer Carol Perry. This is Molly Pat Eystone with Marketing and Communications at Stormont Vail Health. Carol, how's it going?
Oh, good, Molly. We had so much fun the first 4 sessions. We just enjoyed that.
I know. We're zipping through it. How was your weekend?
It was great.
Good.
Had a good time. Got to see the grandkids. And overall, the weather was nice. So
yeah, it was nice to see the sun.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we are excited to be back at work, though, on this Monday and discuss important topics and be a resource for all of you who are listening to know what's going on across the organization and to help us prepare for the magnet visit coming up. We're also joined by Rochelle Rumford, who is an administrative director in acute care services. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, thanks for being here.
Yeah, happy to come.
So today we're going to be talking about the culture of safety, which we know is an extremely important conversation to have. But before we get started, Rochelle, we always start off by talking to you. What do you do, who you are, and what people should know about you?
As you said, I'm an administrative director currently over acute care services, which includes the inpatient units in the hospital, as well as the emergency department. I help with the express care clinics, respiratory therapy, the hospitalist program, and some other areas that connect to the leaders in those departments. Prior to that, I was a director of risk management also at Stormont for nearly 3 years, and likely the reason why I was invited here today to talk about safety. And I enjoyed that role. And before that, I worked in 2 different places, really, in trauma administration, starting at Stormont. Was my first position there, was the trauma program manager. And then I left and went to Oklahoma and worked for the University of Oklahoma and the medical center there as the director of their level 1 and level 2 trauma programs. And then I missed my family, and that includes the family I had at Stormont, and wanted to come back. So I did move back in the summer of 2019 before the world went crazy, and worked in risk management. Then my nursing background is I'm a graduate of Washburn and have been a registered nurse for 18 years. And my first job was actually not with Stormont, but I worked as an emergency department nurse, mostly on night shift, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
You did like the night shift?
I love night shift.
What do you like about it?
Well, particularly in the ER, it's a whole different walk of life. I just really enjoyed those patients and the camaraderie of, you know, usually a younger group of nurses who worked the night shift. So it was a lot of fun.
What do you love about nurses?
Oh, goodness. So many things. I think to start, just that as a collective group, we're so very different from one another, whether that's just our background, where we come from, our ethnicity, our experiences in life, and also in nursing. You know, we help make each other stronger by sharing those experiences with one another. I think things that nurses have in common that I love are our tenacity. I think, you know, using that to have confidence and determination to overcome any problem, which, you know, has been tough the last few years. And so I think that the tenacity that the group of nurses show each and every day is something that I admire and absolutely love. And then I think the love and service to others. I think, you know, sometimes on those hard days when maybe even your tenacity is running short, you know, remembering why it is we became nurses is to take care of others who need that help. And I hope that I never lose sight of that as the reason why I'm in nursing and in leadership now, feeling like it's my job to love and serve the nurses. And I hope that our nurses hold tight to that on those difficult days.
That's good advice too. Always come back to what you remember. So let's jump into this conversation today. So first, what is a culture of safety?
So this is Carol Perry. Nice to listen to Rochelle. I love it that she used to work nights because that allowed me to get to sleep during the day. get to sleep during the night. And I did not like nights. So I always appreciated the nurses that work nights. So culture of safety, and what does that really mean? I think that it means several different things to me. And it's getting back to the basics, having the right staff and the right competency to care for the patients that we serve. Then goes to the next level from the basics to using everybody at their highest level so that we can accept the next patient and know the right place to place that patient. But really, we're starting to take care of such a diverse group of patients that as a healthcare professional, as the nurse care manager, we want to be able to take care of patients based upon their diversity, based upon who they are individually, and have a lot more information regarding what's important to them and their background so that that we can deliver care where they can trust us and know that we know enough about them to deliver the highest level of care. And then also to have as much information about the patient's history so that we can pass on to the next care provider the information about the patient so we can provide the highest level of care within the environment and know what things that could be at risk for our team members. So there's several different layers there, and I just think that trust and patient safety and priority for the caregivers and most importantly keeping the patient and the family safe while they're in this environment is where it starts.
Could you guys talk about some examples of culture of safety?
I mentioned in the introduction that my background's trauma, and I always like to give an example that's tied to that. But, you know, to add to what Carol said, I think it all starts with this preoccupation with safety. You know, I'm a middle child, rule follower, always trying to be the favorite, you know. So for me, that's just my natural personality and how I approached nursing was someone who really tried to dig in and understand the why of everything and really appreciated rules. But sometimes rules, you know, they feel like there are just so many. It's really hard to remember the why with a lot of the policies, procedures, or, you know, for another term, the rules we have to follow as nurses. And so the culture of safety is all about understanding why we have those and being willing to speak up if something goes wrong, whether it's just a failure of the process or the policy to protect the event from happening, or for some reason you were unable to complete it as you had intended. But I compare that to my trauma example, long story to get back to the point. So, Carol, you mentioned that you got to see your grandkids this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
When you used to drive your grandkids around, I know they're a little older now, but when they were babies, how did you make sure that they were safe when you were taking care of them if you guys were going to go out driving around or go to the zoo or something?
Making sure the car seat was strapped in right and that they were strapped in and that they knew that the back doors were locked and that they knew that it was very, very important that they don't touch those belts and that Nana's going to be watching them. And if they needed anything, they needed to ask me, but not try to get it themselves.
Right. And I'm sure you're a great driver. And so when you're out there, you're doing all things right, and you're not going to crash the car. You know what you're doing. So why is it so important then that you make sure that you put them in the car seat, even if you know you're a great driver?
Because you don't know what to expect out of others.
Yeah, I'm not a great driver. So I always ensure that not only are my kids buckled in, but I am as well. But I think of our patients that way. You know, just like kids, you know, they're really at the mercy of their parents or the adult to look out for their safety and to put them in their car seat. Our patients really have that same dependency on us as their nurses and even any member of the care team to look out for them and to safeguard them from anything that's about to go on in their day. And often, especially with nurses, they're the last chain in the link, you know, from the order to the medication, and then they're about to give it. So, you know, the nurse often is the last person there who could recognize an error and help prevent it. What I didn't hear you say is that you put your kids in the car seat or grandkids because you don't want to get a ticket. Even though we have a rule about car seats, and the police could pull you over if they saw your grandchild rolling around in the back seat. So I think that to me is how I remember the culture of safety, you know, the why. So yes, there are rules in the state of Kansas. We have laws about kids having to be in car seats. We have ages, we have kinds, we have heights and weights and all those rules. But that's really not what motivates your behavior. It's the love that you have for your grandchildren. It's the concern that you have for their safety. And you've taken that seriously and never waver from that. And I think that is what I hope that we have for our patients, that we don't waver from the policy or the process and try to, you know, sometimes save time or do things, but always recognize the risk that we take, because no different than you being a good driver and not anticipating, you know, getting to a car crash. We don't anticipate making errors. We don't realize that we're about to give the wrong medication or the wrong dose, or that we're going to, you know, unintentionally have some type of error that could harm our patients. But it's certainly what could happen, and it's why we have the Joint Commission and standards and policies, is to help guide the behavior. But really, that next level is the commitment to that, that comes from that underlying love for our patients and the responsibility that we have for their safety, just like you have for your grandkids and me for my children. And that's what I hope that nurses can relate to, because there are a lot of rules and sometimes it's hard to remember those. But I think if you stop and think, even if it's just a pause, about why you're doing what you're doing and how it's going to keep them safe, I think it will help you have a new appreciation for that and help inspire you to do whatever it takes to keep the patient safe.
That's a great example. It's relative to everyone. Everyone can kind of relate to something like that. So that kind of segues good into, if a nurse does discover an error in patient care, what should they do? Obviously, that's kind of a hard moment, but it does happen.
Yeah. So they should immediately stop, take a pause, and get some help. And I think that that's really hard for people to do because they're trying to evaluate, did I really make the mistake? And what could that impact have? And many things go through your head. And anyone that has made a mistake can stop and remember, oh gosh, remember that sick feeling you had when you had your first mistake and how difficult that was to think, my actions could have really had an impact on an outcome for a patient. So that is why there is peer review and a process by which there are your peers reviewing the incident so that you have a group of people that know that this could happen to anybody and how we can help prevent it. Was it an omission or was it just a scenario that we need to get safety parameters in place so that we can prevent it from happening again? So peer review is, there is a Kansas statute that says all incidents will be reviewed. The Kansas law defines standard 1, 2, and 3, and then that gives us guidance on how we need to deal with them. But if it's a standard 3, probability of causing harm, then we go through a process where the nurse or the individual can go to their peers. And it's really an incredible group of people that look at it from a standpoint of systems. How could that happen? And then what can we do to improve it? And I think that it's very frightening, but I sat on nursing peer review for a long time, so does Rochelle. And it really is an opportunity for staff to go out and say, I want to be a part of a fix here. And it's a systems approach. And they also, as frightening as it is to go into it, know that the whole goal is for nurses to help nurses and be able to improve the environment so that we don't make a mistake again.
You kind of touched on that sick feeling that you might get if and when you make an error. We're all human. It happens. So how do you get over that shame factor? You know, to overcome this, to not do it again, to keep going, that has to be hard.
Certainly. And I think, you know, it depends on the severity of the harm. Hopefully, you know, the patient wasn't harmed. But I think, one, we take a lot of pride in the work we do. So even if we don't harm anyone, it's just that acceptance that we're not perfect. We're all human. We're all going to at some point make a mistake. And I think kind of just being willing to accept that takes vulnerability. And then to go and tell someone about it or report it and verge and have conversations about it certainly can cause anxiety and shame and all of those things. I think, like Carol said, we've all been there. We've all experienced that human element of making a mistake and being able to talk about it openly. I think it helps to have a strong family in your unit where you can go and have those conversations and feel that support from people who know you and you know and trust them. And our hope with peer review is that they will learn that in that group as well or be able to experience that there. It's nobody on the top of their list of things they want to do, but it is a group of their peers, people who have made a mistake, who understand the complexity of providing care in the environments in which we work and can provide that support. We have services available through the chaplains that they can talk to and other resources. And I kind of learned the whole other side of support working in risk management and seeing that group of people who are committed to safety and trained in how to respond to safety events. So as Carol said, often it's like a process failure or something in the chain that was supposed to work didn't work that time for whatever reason. And so they can go through that and review it in detail and try to find those fixes and look for opportunities to fix the system. And a couple years ago, we started a program called Good Catch, where we try to recognize those things before it reaches a patient and, you know, have an opportunity to do the same type of deep review of the process and how it was working or not working, as it often is in errors, being able to fix those things before we have that reach a patient. And I think the more people take ownership of that and look for those opportunities to report things that aren't working, the better we are, and the less likely it is to kind of result in that awful feeling when you know that you're trying to do your very best and still had an incident occur that caused harm to a patient.
And I think hearing from the both of you too, you know, as a nurse and hearing from two leaders has to give everyone a little bit of comfort to hear from both of you that say it happens, but we're going to get through it. So talk about what else Stormont does to help nurses who experience errors, the peer review, and then obviously we value and celebrate the good catch. Anything else that we do?
There's many nurses in the organization that know and can remember that several leaders have just checked in on them, and I can tell by setting in on nursing peer review the potential struggle someone's going to have, and then you just seek them out and you check on them and you offer employee assistance and you make sure, because you can tell when it's deep in their soul that they've made an error. And so you just keep telling them they're an awesome clinician and that this is not career defining and they don't need to question whether or not they should still be a clinician, and they're awesome. And you just keep lifting them up until they get that confidence back, and then they start giving that confidence to someone else, and we make each other feel better about something that could happen. And I think that's what Magnet really exemplifies, is that nurses working with nurses and then interdisciplinary teams lifting each other up to be the best. There's many things we have in place, but there's nothing that, in my opinion, replaces that personal connection of going and, you know, as a chief nurse, when I go to somebody and say, look me in the eye. Yes, there was a mistake. Your heart is right. I could tell by the way you responded at peer review. You are awesome. Don't you let anything enter your head that's not true. You're a great nurse. You're smart. You're doing a great job. Yes, there was a mistake made, but we are, as a team, going to do everything we can to prevent that. And you just keep your head up because you have nothing to be ashamed about. There was many things you did right. And just keep reiterating all the good. And you can help people come out of it stronger, better than ever. And then they'll help the next person. They'll just pass that on.
To add to that, I'm sure you remember, Carol, the very first Good Catch Award we gave to a nurse on Pavilion, who was like almost tearful when he won the award because he had made a medication mistake where he realized that there was, I think it was mislabeled, medication was mislabeled, and he recognized that and reported it and got it fixed and was able to then give the patient the correct medication and dose. And I think the best way to learn sometimes, unfortunately, is when you've fallen short and you really, I think, have a renewed focus on safety and all of the steps it takes to make sure that you're not going to repeat that. And I think it was especially touching to me to see him experience that and to get the recognition, really, for the good catch, but also for not giving up, for continuing to do the difficult work and look for opportunities to protect our patients by checking the label every time, doing all of the steps. And I think that it's a great testament to how a culture of safety can work when you learn from your mistakes or from the mistakes of others and have that always observant eye looking for opportunity and error.
I do remember that clearly, Rochelle, and I know that that individual is a fabulous nurse, but what I really remembered, the celebration of all the team members. So they must have known that, and then he shared it. But again, that is what the culture of safety is person after person, no matter what your role is, having a focus on safety. It's not just about nurses. It is about the entire organization focusing on safety and then supporting each other on a job well done. And if we need to improve, how do we look at that from a systems perspective? So that's a celebration, and it's exciting to know that everyone is committed to that refocus. And focus is the key to safety. It's the very, very basics. When you're walking into work, know what your surroundings are. But when you're giving a med or you're doing anything, don't let all the noise distract you. Focus on the task at hand. And that's the basics to safety. And that's what that good catch was all about.
That's important, and important to celebrate.
Yeah, celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. Before we switch gears, did we miss anything that we want to talk about patient safety organization? I think kind of the conversation centered around that, but if there's anything else.
You know, patient safety organization is, like us, an organization who voluntarily shares information about errors that occur. And we do that so that we also have the opportunity to learn from errors that are happening in other systems that have things that are similar to ours, and then some that are very different that maybe have created a new process because of errors that had occurred in that environment. I think it's similar to all of the quality programs that we do for outcomes for our patients, but really looking at safety and being able to share our experience and have the resources available to us from other organizations that put safety as the top priority and focus on those things so that we can again, support our team members and the patient care team especially in finding ways for them to be able to work each and every day and deliver care in the safest way.
I always say copy-paste.
Right.
Sometimes that's the right answer, right? Okay, so let's shift gears into healthcare violence, which is honestly a hard topic to discuss. And it's really sad that we have to talk about it, but especially right now, that's what's going on a lot in the legislature. There's a lot of testimony going on from people on our team and across Kansas as well, and then across the nation too, about all of the violence that's going on in healthcare that our nurses and physicians and non-clinical team members experience as well. Unfortunately, we're not unique to the situation. What do you both think causes violence in healthcare settings?
I think it starts with behavioral health. The mind is complex, and in many cases, it is just not treated. Behavioral health, and then alcohol and drugs and alteration in how people would normally act, and then just really not knowing the environments that people live in and what brings them, the why in their own home environments, and then what brings them here, and then what do we need to treat, and how do we separate out their medical issues from other issues, and then get the best plan of care.
Yeah, I think life is really hard. I think even just in my own life, and I am extremely fortunate, but just the day-to-day things that you have to do, all of the stressors that you have in your life, whether that's, you know, raising kids, your job, the bills. I mean, there are a lot of things that can really cause stress and anxiety in our lives. And I think you add some medical emergency or your own health crisis to that, and I think it's from a place of despair, especially with underlying substance use disorders or mental health concerns or issues. I think people just don't have a good hand on their coping mechanisms at that moment. Unfortunately, lash out with violence, whether that's verbal or physical. And I think it's unfortunate. I go back to, I grew up in Wamego, Kansas. Okay, like, it doesn't get better than that, really, at least in my experience.
It doesn't.
And, you know, coming to Topeka and going to school and then starting my job working really in the emergency department, it was eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And I think you could easily get angry with people for the behavior and the choices that they make. And certainly we want to make sure that we're protected. But I think I always just was like, wow, that's like so surprising. There must be some reason why they're behaving in that way. And I think as healthcare organizations, especially committed to our community, we look for opportunities to try to meet people where they are with the resources that they need, not only to help them have improved access to resources for their own wellness, so that it also helps decrease the amount of times that we're in these situations where they weren't able to get access to primary care or to services that they needed for behavioral health, and they come into the emergency department and they are at that point of crisis. And so for me, I try to take it beyond that moment, like get to how did we get here. It's part of why when I went back to school, I got my degree in public health, because I always think the signs are there. And that's probably why I love Stormont, you know, the commitment we have to our community and being able to try to help avoid getting to that point. Because sometimes once we're there, it's really hard to de-escalate it. And we try to do a variety of training opportunities with our team members so that they, if they find themselves in that position, can hopefully safely de-escalate and get themselves in a safe position and help the patient still. But for me, it's all about how do we prevent that from happening in the first place.
Like I said, it's hard that we even have to have this discussion, but there's so many people that can help.
I think that Stormont itself has care managers and social workers, and anything we can do to prevent it on the front end. There's even some Retain Works, which is some grants that we're working on to try to see people early on when they're not able to work, to get them back to work as soon as possible, and the why behind why aren't they able to work. Did they get a DUI? Did they get in an accident? Why that? I mean, there's everybody has a story of the why. It's private, it's confidential, but the healthcare providers know and need to be able to assess that and see how we can get them to the next phase of wellness as soon as possible to keep them from going into more of a spiral of illness.
Yeah. And Rochelle, talk about our workplace safety committee and all that Stormont does to help, you know, de-escalate these situations or prevent them from happening. I know we have the patient notes in mm-hmm. files now, and how previous solutions have helped in the past for patients. So talk about some of the other initiatives that we do.
I think the workforce safety initiatives that have taken place over the past few years have really been top class for any healthcare organization. During our most recent Joint Commission survey, they called it out as being ahead of most other institutions. And I would have to agree, having listened to a lot of podcasts about workplace violence, we've done a lot of things to position ourselves well. It's always work to do. But things like our screening and assessment that we do so that we can add a warning to the chart when staff members log in to be able to visually see and have a moment to, again, pause and think about safety from a violence and aggression assessment that is done. And then, you know, that's available both inpatient and outpatient so that if they're, you know, had an incidence of violence while they're hospitalized, it can still share that same sense of awareness with the ambulatory team. We also have the best team. So, you know, in the moment when a patient's having some type of crisis, having the very skilled and experienced resources come to the nurse and the care team and the patient to help provide assistance and support during that moment to help de-escalate and have a plan for what next. And care conferences with our physician leaders to helpfully, if we recognize that there's potential for risk, get the right medications ordered and the right plan for this individual patient to give both us and the patient the best opportunity to be able to have a safe care delivery and for the patient to get well and to get discharged.
I want to say from all the initiatives that we've done from patient and employee safety, a good share of them have come from the nursing staff. And that's one thing we've written to in the magnet document. What have we done to create safety, quality? It's not through just regulatory Joint Commission stuff, but that is part of the magnet document on creating the safest environment for the patients, safest environment for the staff. So many of the stories that we had written to in the document was about quality and patient safety, but the environment in the ED, the environment to add more panic buttons, the environment for the security guards to round more. The nursing staff were the ones that said, let's be able to pass on the information for the flagging of the chart so that we can make sure our colleagues have every detail that they have. So a lot of that came out of nursing, and then we pulled our professional interdisciplinary team members in to say, how can we make this a systems improvement? And that's how those changes made. So that came from the staff, and that is a big part of the magnet document that we had written to, because that's included in the standards of improvement.
And that goes back to learning from experience. And that's something that I think that our organization is really good at, is taking experiences and acting upon them to make them not happen again. So that should give people on our team a little bit of confidence that we are going to take action and take things seriously because we care about our team members and their safety.
Absolutely. And I would say it goes back to the culture of safety and being willing to speak up. I remember as a new nurse that I had just kind of grown to accept that violence is just kind of a part of the job. You know, when I first worked in the air and I would see it happen probably almost every day, fortunately not to me, but, you know, to my colleagues or to others, you know, working in that environment. And I think getting to that point where you know that that's not okay and that saying something will matter, and so you take the time to speak up and to report it so that we can learn about that specific instance and is there an opportunity there. A lot of things I think about are the workforce redesign of, like, the physical environment. Mm-hmm. Like, was there a way for you to get to remove yourself and to be safe and things like that. A lot of changes have come from people being willing to speak up and to say something.
That's right.
So that's a good note, is speak up and say something, because we can enact change. Okay, our last topic, our last question. For the 21st year, nursing was ranked as the most trusted profession according to the Gallup poll. Additionally, U.S. adults ranked nurses as number one ranking for honesty and ethical standards. What support and training are available for ethical patient concerns, especially as nursing is viewed as such a trusted and honest profession?
Stormont has multiple educational offerings, but I think it starts long before they hit Stormont stores, and that's in nursing school and in whatever healthcare path you're going down. Ethics and trust and what are first and foremost, first do no harm to patients, no matter what pathway you're going down. In nursing, it is your priority, your number one. You know, we talked about Gene Watson's theory, and that center core of all that we do is our commitment to the patient, and that's safety, quality, listening to them, holistic care, and that to me is the basics. It starts in nursing school all the way through, and then trust is gained by being able to listen, look people in the eye, following through. It starts with basics. If you tell somebody, I'll be right back with a pitcher of water, those are little things that build on trust. Go get it, take it back, and then look them back in the eye. And that's how we've kept that trust, is just by action after action after action over the year, and that's across our profession. But people do trust nurses because they're there continually in care 24/7. And we follow through with what we say, and we listen without judgment. And like Rochelle said, I thought it was beautiful when you said, we love our patients like we love our families, not because we have to do it because the regulation said so. We do it because that's what our hearts, that's why you get in this profession to begin with.
And I think our patients can feel that and experience that when we're willing to spend time with them and communicate with them. And like Carol said, look them in the eye and, you know, really understand what they're going through and advocate for them and kind of be their voice when they need us to be. And I think patients recognize that, their families recognize that, and I think we recognize that in each other. And I think, you know, as we look to continue to grow our workforce, it's really up to us as leaders to make sure we're choosing the right people who believe in those same things that we believe in, that will have a safety first mindset, that look for opportunities to connect at a human level with people and to be that trusted care person for the patients, mm-hmm. to just help them along as they are getting well.
This is a good conversation. It was an important conversation, so I appreciate you both.
I want to end by saying I appreciate Rochelle pointing out that I'm a great driver. There's a few a few people out there that would
are
remember
laugh at that.
Years ago, they'll crack up. But when I have my family in the car, I'm telling you, I am focused. And those grandbabies, you're right, Rochelle, they make me very serious when I drive. So
only drive with Carol when she's got the family in the car.
When she's got the grandbabies. No, I've grown up a lot and realized what could happen. So, but that, there's a few people out there that would crack up because they knew me when I was young.
Well, maybe I still have a chance then. Maybe I'll get better with driving as I get older.
There you go.
Well, everyone listening, again, to wrap this up, we're here for you all. If you ever need anything, reach out to Carol, reach out to Rochelle. We're all here for everyone to make it great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Molly.
Yes, thank you, Molly.
You.
Okay, episode 5 of Just Another Magnet Monday in the books. Next week, we're going to talk about evidence-based practice, staying up to date with the current research, how we bring that back to patient care, and we'll also talk about updating our own education practices, onboarding, policies, procedures, protocols. It'll be another really informative episode for everybody. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.